Boom. And we are live. Welcome, Anthony.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I'm thinking just today, we caught up on a BNI meeting about 6 months ago, randomly.
Yeah, that's gone rapid fast.
It's probably longer, but it's thereabouts. Definitely during
Yeah.
lockdown, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I mean, we're all trying to network. I did that BNI thing for 4 years, but I think it helped. I made a couple of friends from it, people that have supported me a lot. I'm not sure if I wanted to stay in it. It's just personal choice. And then commitment with the children, yourself, two small kids, commitment. So, you're always going to put your energy where you value things the most, So if being an entrepreneur is in the top three, that's going to drive you. If being with your family is number one, they're always going to come first. So it's striking that balance, isn't it? Striking that balance. And
Nice.
I think also the people, it's very structured, which is good. It's the McDonald's thing
Yes.
of networking. And I think it definitely brings it brought me a lot of I mean, I was already okay at public speaking, but it brought a lot of confidence in just repeating the message, not being frightened. It's like the KFC model, where the guy would knock on the door 600 times until he was accepted, his recipe was accepted, but he just didn't give up, And I see it with you now recently. You're doing a lot more live stuff and you're pushing out the content. And I think that's what it's about, isn't it? It's just not being frightened to share your authenticity. I had a good buddy of mine, is a well-known therapist, good martial artist, and he paid me a visit recently. And he was saying to me, like, I get a lot more views on Facebook when I just talk about things I like to talk about, things that make him feel passionate. And people just resonate. They resonate with that energy. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Whereas before he was trying to be, I do this system, I practice this system, I've taught this system, I follow the system, and it was still good and people still loved it, but it didn't have that extra little bit of chili pepper on top of the
Yeah.
recipe. It didn't have that zing,
Yes, I feel that the topic here is going to be men's mental health, just to preface that, and then to bring it back to what we just said there, like one of the main things I joined BNI for was to actually pitch, like you said there, pitch for 60 seconds every week for 52 weeks of the year. And it's like I realized that I learned so much from that, and it's bringing it back to what you're finishing on there with the authenticity. I get that feedback a lot. You're very authentic. I don't realize I'm being authentic. I just think I'm just being myself, right? But I'm starting to listen now that people really can grasp that from just meeting me. They're like, wow, that it happened this morning on a clubhouse. I joined the 5 a.m. clubhouse, and I just, went up to the stage, spoke for a few minutes, and it was just that was the response. Like, wow, I love how honest and vulnerable you are. So myself and yourself would be in the space of, tapping into that vulnerability, like activating the courage to speak and try new things. And if I can track that back, like, so my young cabra man, and then finding consciousness or personal development and spirituality, and then going into a BNI room full of business people, like, it was a very interesting dynamic for me to figure out. And am I a businessman? Am I a spiritual teacher? Am I a coach? Am I a construction? It was very, very funny to just show up and stay in that room and feel the fear and do it anyway, right?
I get you. I mean, I years ago, like maybe 2004, doesn't sound that long ago, does it? Because it's still got the word 2000 after it.
That's the
But
year I got my moped,
it's
man. I
like
was 16. I'll never forget that, man. Moped was brand new.
I had a company called Discover Your Potential, and we were coaching, and I did a bit of work for Deepak Chopra. And we used to do personal development seminars in Ireland with a company called Endeavor Coaching.
Nice.
And Endeavor Coaching was an offshoot of another New Insights Coaching, the Neil Asher business. And then I worked with a chap called Andy Eaves and Sharon, a I can't remember Sharon's, Frith. And they were both, you know, really into Demartini, into a bit of Tony Robbins. They were using, I think it's Dan Martin, one of the leading sort of marketing coaches. And we had these incredible people come over. I mean, we had guys from America coming over, Canada. One guy's pitch was incredible. It was like, if you buy my executive coaching program at 14,000 euros, we stick you on a 6-week cruise and you have a luxury apartment and you get all your coaching and you get up instead of doing the casino and the ballroom, you're in the thing. And that's what he did. And he was selling these things, you know. So we were definitely in that space back then. But some of it didn't feel very real. You know, and I got involved with one particular chap, which I won't name for his own, because he suffered eventually with male mental health issues. So I don't want to really mention who it was, but I invested some money in his business and he went downhill. He, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a marriage breakup or something. And the thing that we're going to launch together just never happened. And I think it took about 7 years before he reached out to me. And luckily for me, I had some kind of business insurance package. So any money I'd invested, I got back. So that was a big relief for him. But he was prepared to stick his neck out and try and, you know, I suppose, be honorable and do the right thing. But I said, look, it's a mess. Get your head sorted, you know, get your head sorted. I mean, I look at what you're doing and I think about all the guys that come to me that are early 20s to mid 20s, they're looking for that older brother figure. They're looking for that somebody who's not going to bully them and berate them, somebody who's going to guide them and lead them.
Take so much courage to take that first. Sorry to cut across, but take so much courage to take that first step is what I'm seeing.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? They're already doing it. They're already like meeting other people that they admire that are more spiritual, they think or they perceive. You know, it's all about that filtration, isn't it? How you perceive it. They perceive that the person is more enlightened or more spiritually wise. And really it's just that person's filtering their experience of reality through that lens, you know. It doesn't make anyone less spiritual. And I suppose, I mean, I don't know I see you, I mean, I would encourage anyone who's a listener to this and anyone of my audience that I'd like to share this with your permission, obviously. And I might even use the audio for a podcast as well, if that's okay with you. But I would say to anyone listening to this, if you are the Cabra man, if you have been a person who's worked in the trade industry, a person who's maybe slogged their guts out in working, grinding, and not really finding the answers inside, then to reach out to somebody like yourself, because you can identify with that model of life. Do you understand what I'm saying? There's that, that framework that's probably, I'm going to hazard a guess, is built from our environment, from the way we're brought up, the area we're brought up, the people that we associate with. And I think somewhere when you remove yourself, like I removed myself from South Africa, I removed myself from England. And if I go back to these places, well, maybe not South Africa, but if I go back to England, my buddies are still doing the same thing, the same life, going to the same pub. Well, maybe not now, but you understand, and that's fine. I mean, that's the matrix, isn't it? That's the 70% population just building and creating and keeping the engine at the wheels turning. But I didn't ever relate to that. Now, the downside with this thinking that you're more awake, thinking that you're more awoke, thinking that you have the answers, there's a downside to that, because it brings on mental health issues, right? You can relate to this, because you feel the emotions of everything. And then it's hard to differentiate if that's your emotion or whether you're feeling it, because you're so much more sensitive. And with great power comes great sensitivity. It's not, it's a double-edged sword. You can't have yin without yang, right? So we assume, like I've had some amazing teachers whose personal life I would never want. I would never want their personal life. It is a disaster. Mm-hmm. But they just channel wisdom, you know? And I always say to people, know that a pumpkin is a fruit, not a vegetable, right? And that's the knowledge. But the wisdom is how to cook it, how to prepare it, how to eat it, you know? It goes in a pie, right?
there's so much I'd love to explore there with that. Even going back to my mental health, I don't even say crisis. I just use that word. Like, it's not a crisis, but it was trouble in between my ears. Now, is that a mental health thing or is that a spiritual awakening? And for me, spiritual awakening just means awakening back to who I actually am. Like taking layers off the onion. So when someone's able to channel a good message, sometimes they just haven't got into some of their own limitations or limiting beliefs or different things that they came here in this lifetime to. Because I used to find that fascinating that someone would be able to bring such clarity in one aspect. And on your first engagement, you think, wow, that person really has their shit together. But then in another aspect, and no judgment here, it's like shit's all over the place. and then it's like that wounded healer. Cause like when I first found information, all they wanted to do was share it. I was in no position to share it. I was like, I was taking it from a book. I was adapting beliefs. And I was like, everybody should know this. They don't teach this in school. Like, you know, Think and Grow Rich is around since this time. Like not even so much spirit, even the power of now. It's an obvious, like the power of now. It's like, Why aren't we in the moment? When I first heard that, like I couldn't comprehend that there was gaps between thought at that period of time. I was like, what? You know?
It's like blah, 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 blah.
It's just like I say this often. I was on the motorway in Perth, Australia, and I was using lampposts. I was driving in my Hiace van. And I says, right, I'm not gonna think between now. And I literally used poles to actually just to start and sense, because obviously the gap is always happening.
Yeah,
but we're unaware or we're not paying attention or not acknowledging the gaps.
Yeah,
so it was had to find that one gap. So then for me, I got really heavy into researching and reading, and that became another way to avoid myself or my feelings. Like even though, so I went the route of psychiatry, and I've said that story in different ways. I went GP, I went to Australia, I went psychiatry. Then I found books. And I remember saying to myself early on after in that journey, I wish they would have just told me to think less and feel more. That's 9 years ago now. I'm still practicing that, feel more, because the thinking is really just a byproduct of something that we're not getting the message for. Yeah.
What's your favorite saying? Like what's something that resonates with you? Like I love the saying, human being, not human doing.
Yes.
To me, that's just my current thing that I'm into, you know, and that might change in a few years, but I just love that feeling of human being. What is it to be human? Being human. In fact, I've even studied human design. I went back studying recently in the lockdown with a crowd that I'd studied with in 2009. And you know, the inner forces within us are influenced in equal amounts by the external forces around us, but it's having ownership and alignment. And I do remember a few years before we went through this thing, or we're going through this thing, this purge, a buddy of mine said, would you like to come and see Eckhart Tolle? I've got a ticket and I'd love you to come. Well, we sat at the back of this, the RDS, right, at the back, and we pissed ourselves laughing through that whole thing because he is one of the funniest dudes you're ever going to see live. He just had us in stitches, you know, right? And the ironic thing.
At the human
thing,
condition, right?
Yeah. But the funny thing was he was trying to get everyone in the audience to experience that. And all you could hear was this cheering and like, glasses clinking, and you could hear the beer being wafted back. And he says, you know, in Eckhart Tolle's sort of distinctive style, he says, "Now, in this moment, while I am with you, being still, there is the largest ever collection of beer festival goers in the tent next door, trying very hard not to be in the moment, drinking and chatting and making as much noise so they don't have to be in the moment." It's like, but like the whole thing, he had everybody to a T. And I suppose what I wanted to say about that is sometimes we go and we train and we read books and we may not get what we think we're looking for. But like the BNI thing, right? If you got nothing from it, I mean, you met it something. You always get something.
Always, yes.
Like 3 years, nearly, yeah, 3.5 years ago, I invested a shit ton of money in doing a course with Brian Rose of London Real. You can check out his thing.
I know.
He has completely changed, right? And I could feel it happening while we were on the course.
He's running for mayor.
I know. Yeah, well, you know, Brian, good luck to you, but what are you doing, dude? But anyway, look, we had a good time, and a lot of people left very disillusioned, didn't really get much from it. We kind of felt like he was good at sucking people in. But you know what? I made 15 really good entrepreneurial friends, and some of us actually even gathered together for a couple of years in a row in Canada, and we went camping. So it didn't matter what the money was. Those people are, and one of them's become a very close friend. So two of them actually, but so you always get something.
Everything's always perfect, right? There's these fundamental beliefs, like it's always exactly as it's supposed to be. Just because the fact that it is, right? Because fighting that is actually insane in a way.
How did you know that you were in crisis, or did you think you're in crisis, or did you just you were just like a jumbled up bunch of wires trying to?
I had no language, Anthony. I had no like, I was always a guy that was able to find my own way and put my hand to kind of anything in a way. Like, I was 23 at the time, and right. Up until that point, I never seemed to have any issues with circles or friends or stuff like that. So when I experienced a panic attack, I genuinely thought I was going to die. And the only thought was doctor, you know. And I've got so much hindsight now, and I've got so many different understandings now. Like, even for the amount of weed that I smoked leading up to that year, I hadn't smoked it in a while. I was saving to go to Australia. And that brought up a lot of feelings that I hadn't been processing, obviously, because once you're high, you're elevated frequency. So I see the thread in everything. Like, even jumping to the reading the books, I was trying to solve the problem on the same level of thinking that created it, which was more thinking. I was trying to think my way out of thinking. So it's the processing of the feelings. And the reason why I started to smoke so young as well is because I was so sensitive, and I didn't know how to, you know, do what I needed to do with that gift. So I see the gifts in it now. But at the time, I remember specifically in the cinema, I had a panic attack or an anxiety attack, and I thought, in my mind, I was visualizing me going out of that cinema in an ambulance.
Right.
So that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
So then it was another experience in the bookies where I was sitting on the chair and the whole bookie started to spin. Vertigo, said the doctor. Wow. And I just kind of nipped it in the bud and said, once I get to Australia, I'll be okay. Because I was saving. So I'm kind of like in the mindset, when I get to the seaside, when I get to the beach, when I get to the boys, it'll be okay. But I got there, and obviously I had the same brain. So I had this, and then all of a sudden my overthinking got worse, and I was having, like, when I was putting beer into the mix, wasn't having the same effect. When I was putting, if I'd had a joint, it wasn't having the same effect. So these things that had, you know, I didn't know they were working for me. That was just the lifestyle. But when they stopped working for me and made things worse, I really didn't know what to do. I was like a rabbit in the headlights, because I'd say to the boys, I'd be the one that would tend to, a lot of lads would come to for advice in a way. You know, like, I kind of seemed to have my shit together in lots of ways. laughing at that now, but I did. So when I said that, they were like, come on, Johnny, what? So with no language and no understanding, so my only thought was, okay, I need to go to a psychiatrist. And even him telling me, you're clinically depressed and lacking serotonin. Like, there's a really, there's a natural way to create serotonin.
Yeah. Wow. You
know, a drug with a barcode is what he offered me. So it was lack of understanding. That's why I kind of feel that I'm the guy now that I want to be for me 10 years ago. So if there's somebody who's just experienced this and kind of stuff, I'm going to really accelerate your journey because I'm going to get you into the reason
right
now. I'm going to get you to the root right now. It's going to be uncomfortable, but it's way easier than going around in circles and chasing your tail for years.
Yeah. I wonder if you kind of knew something was coming and you were just self-medicating to put it on the go slow. Or do you think you were smoking the weed because it was cool?
Oh, I have a deep love for marijuana. I really do. I actually love the plant. I love the smell of it. I love when I went to Amsterdam and look at the buds. So it's like when that started to drive me, you know, it's like you can utilize these medicines, but when it's possessive or you are not happy without, then there's an issue. Because here's what I see that to be now. I see what you see to resonate. If you're feeling a certain way, some people can resonate. They get in and they have their joint, or they get in and they have their wine, or they have their even a smoke. You feel a certain way, and then for that moment you elevate, or for those hours you elevate. So there's an area there that we continue to avoid. So you feel plateaued or kind of a little bit kind of, you know, stressed or whatever, and then you smoke and you get high.
Yeah.
So you're bypassing a lot of stuff there.
I get you.
So the journey for me was, because I started to use weed again since, was, okay, I feel this clarity, like the visions are clear, I understand where I'm going and what I'm doing, but when I wake up in the morning, I don't feel the same way. So it was that whole what goes up must come down thing. So I had to figure all my stuff out with no substances or with no help in a way.
There's definitely a power to the plant-based medicines. I mean, I see it even at a very fundamental, structured basis with Chinese herbs. I mean, I saved a guy's leg. I can actually say I saved a guy from having his leg amputated just through giving him herbs. And I have the pictures. It's like mad, you know. And I look back on the books that I studied, and the teacher in the book says it's a soul message. The plants, it's got nothing to do with the biochemistry, really. It's the message that the plants contain. And your body's either going to resonate with that message or it's not going to listen, you know. And you know yourself, you know, I've nothing against Western medicine because it saved my life and my wife's life. And I have, a new grafted cruciate ligament in the left knee. So there is a place for it. But for general health, we kind of fall down, you know. A couple of years ago, my wife was out in the field where we used to live, working with the horses, and she just felt this crushing kind of low energy and just felt really wiped out. And she was lying down on the couch for a couple of days. And, you know, you think, well, maybe the iron count's low. She's a vegetarian. She needs, you know, top up. But she was getting kind of pretty concerned. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to treat you. I'm going to get a buddy of mine to tune in, you know, using vibration and intention and kinesiology. And it came up that she'd contracted a version of the Coxsackie virus, which is in cattle. And we were like, well, okay, we'll run with that. And then he gave me the remedies. And it took a few days for the remedies to arrive, you know, like a kind of a homeopathic style vibrational essence. But in the meantime, she was getting concerned. She went down to the doctor and she explained all her symptoms. And he's listing them off on his computer. He goes, oh, yeah, you got depression. So we're going to give you, we'll start you off on a low dose antidepressive. Well, she came back like thunder. I mean, she was like, what the? You know, and I said, well, you know, he's working within a parameter that he's been trained to. He's not looking at the other side of the road, or he's not looking beyond that parameter. And, you know, I said to her, you know, you've worked with depressed people. I'm sure you have. I've worked with depressed people. And you know what depression, you're not getting out of bed. You have no motivation. You don't even want to do a podcast. You don't want to do what we're doing, right? And I said, do you love your life? She said, I absolutely, like, how can I not love my life? I have two horses, two beautiful children. We live in a great location. We get on. We've been together 16 years and we support each other. So she's like, my life is gold. And I said, okay, well, you have the choice now. You can take the antidepressants or you can take these remedies. So she took the remedies. She went, I'll take the remedies. 3 days later, brand new, back in work, nothing wrong. And she says, fuck me. I could have been going down the rabbit hole of depression. And then that's on my medical records, right? And now I'm taking antidepressants. So now I'm reinforcing the fact that I'm depressed.
It's messed up.
And I think this is part of the awakening, Jonathan. This is why you're here, is there are moments. I mean, yeah, sure, antidepressants can, to a certain degree, put people in a cast, which stops them from jumping off a bridge or whatever. But it's not the solution.
Or causes them to, right? Most of I only read the side effects of the ones they prescribed me only recently in the last year. And I didn't read them at the time, and I wasn't even guided to read them at the time. And it was actually frightening what the side effects were to the thing.
Yeah.
So it's messed up, and I get quite direct with the messed upness of that. It's not the doctor's fault. The doctor went through college and learned something. What did they spend their 7 years, a week and a half on nutrition? And they call homeopath, like your Chinese medicine, they call all of that stuff
woo-woo.
Alternative, right?
It's
they call the stuff that they call the stuff that comes from the ground, plants, or they call all of that stuff alternative. That's how hilarious it is when you actually just hear that, and that truly lands, that all of the drugs with barcodes that are chemical based, and the ones that are natural that grow on the earth, they're the alternative. It's actually funny. Yeah.
It's funny.
The perception, Anthony, I just want to preface that. The perception that we have of the white coat, you know, that feeling when you're in a hospital, you just feel like you're in the right place. It's a real safety. It's a real feeling of safety. That was something that I had to overcome over time, because my trust waned. If that's the right word, my trust like just disappeared for the white coats or for the DR in front of the name or stuff like that. Because I really started to realize that these guys are winging it, just like every other human on the planet. And I actually have no trust there anymore. Not that there's anything wrong with the individual, but that the system itself is just so messed up that my trust in the doctors or the recognition that we're all human beings and that we all have instinct that developed over time, having three kids and three different experiences and stuff, to develop that real strong instinct now. When I've got a niggle, even if you're a DR or a this or that or the other, I still trust that more than I trust what you're telling me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, so kind of to pull it back into the mental health, like how would you put up the signpost for these men now? I mean, it's regardless of whether you're 14 or 84, you know, how do you put up the signpost there? Because I'm seeing kids now who are borderline at 13, 14, and they're actually extremely powerfully awakened already.
Yes,
but that's they're scary. Experiencing it as anxiety. So where what's the entry point for these people? If I was to point some of my clients or families of my clients who have, you know, an example I can give you is one of my colleagues in the States. She was telling me her son just feels like there's no point. I might as well just stay in my room at 21. Play PlayStation until his eyes fall out and smoke weed just to numb it. So where's your signpost? How do you put it up there? Is it a case of, if my words resonate with you, follow the rabbit down the rabbit hole? Or is there some other signpost that you stick out for these people?
That's a very interesting and layered question. I feel that in one aspect, a no judgment to any parent, because we're all only doing our best, but I just think that when a child is really, just by their presence, children can be confronting. And not a lot of parents know what to do with that. You know, so there's no blame here at all, but there's just, I think early on, the next generation of kids, it's so exciting for me because they are so tuned in and we're in good hands when they get into whatever the politics is, et cetera, et cetera. And that lad there, like, it's all divine. So if or when he's ready, something will pop, you know. But if I was to say, what's the antidote? It's actually to feel and get clear on what you want. Like, it's something that's not drilled home enough in school. Like, what do you actually want? Like, where do you want to be? Like, my attitude when I was 21, when I was drinking so many bottles of Coke and stuff like that, if someone said anything, my attitude and response was, you can't hoard steel. So there was no talking to me at that age. Like, you weren't, like, I'd listen a little bit, or you probably would have got me with regards to being successful, or I don't know what would it appeal to me at that. I'm reading Nuts magazines, I'm partying.
Was an element of ego in there that you were following the ego model, like flash cars, make the money,
just get money, just to support my weekend. Just to live for the weekend and tell myself every Monday that I'm not going to do that again. And then come Thursday or Friday, I'm kind of feeling ready and ready to rock and roll again for another weekend of enjoying myself. So what I see that to be now is, when we're under the influence of alcohol or drugs, we feel connected. We, you know, that phrase, drunken mind, sober heart. Well, why not just have the courage to be in your heart now and deal with all the lows that come with chemically induced highs, like the MDMA and all these ecstasies? They take a good 4 or 5 days to get your brain back functioning. So it's a difficult 4 or 5 days. So the table of consciousness helps me so much. Courage. Courage is the gateway. Courage to feel. Courage to be honest. Courage to get clear. Accepting where you're at. You know, I don't want to open that door because I'm ashamed of it. Yeah, well, that's beautiful. Inner works. Let's have a look at the shame. Let's reclaim that energy. Because if you keep looking away, where's it going to go?
It's going to get buried.
It's going to come out in a disease. It's going to hit saturation point. It's going to come out somewhere. So my core teaching now is inner works is the only work. So it's like, I come from construction worker. I know how to work 60, 70, 80 hours and do nixers on my way home and feel that sense of pride, like a sense of accomplishment that comes along with that. Like that's what a man does, but it's not what a man does. He can do that. But I think the true new man, or the new masculine archetype, is really more vulnerable, more courageous, and feels it all. Because I can relate so much. Like I used to be able to make a cry go away with a breath or with a swallow. Gone. But I'm realizing now that the gift is in actually feeling that, like feeling that emotion. It's really beautiful. And I think what's missing for most young men or people is the actual contrast of what you're missing.
Imagine if we could get in the time machine, right? And we could go back and you could influence, for example, Hollywood, right? And you could say, right, going forward, all men are going to be portrayed as sensitive, strong but sensitive and emotional beings that are not thrown out into the midst of war like cannon fodder. You know, can you imagine, you know, the programming now that occurs in the cinema on people is like, oh, right, it's okay. Oh Jesus, I just drop a little tear there and get quite emotional. Like you can see the programming is medieval. It's going back, you know, a couple of thousand years of, you know, the rhetoric is this is the behavior. And we're now starting to see things become normal, like transgender is now, you know, a big thing, and binary, non-binary. I mean, I'm confused. I mean, I'm an 80s kid, you know, we just, you know, we drank out of hose pipes and we street fought, you know, and rode BMXs, and that was it. You know, it was a bit like the old Cobra Kai. You just got stuck in, bosh. There was no spirituality.
Big boys don't cry, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then, you know, 2023, I had a major injury to the knee. I remember actually crying with the pain. My teacher jumped up, you know, and he grabbed me by the, and he was like, stop, you know, you're a second down black belt. You don't cry.
Wow.
But there was an emotional component to the pain, because it wasn't actually, I mean, yeah, it was bloody painful, But it's like, I'm about to move to another country to live. I'm about to move to Ireland. This has happened 2 weeks. 2 weeks before. And I went into the... I really did experience depression. I really did. I mean, this is a guy who's trained as a health scientist. I was working towards physical therapy. And you know what I did? I lay in my bed, right? My little apartment that I had with my knee up, resting, bound, drinking beer and eating paracetamol because that was the solution to the pain. You know, and it's like, yeah, I'll be grand. I'll knock it back with a beer then. The beer will relax me. The paracetamol will kill the pain. And it was that, looking back, oh my God. And for years afterwards, if I saw somebody do the cruise ship or I saw something, like, you know, on TV or, you know, football, and I just could, it would bring me right back to that moment. But the moment was pivotal because I went and sought out the best healers I could find. And one of my first lessons was it was never about the knee. You know,
it was something to get your attention.
It's just like, dude, stop trying to become a martial arts instructor. You're not supposed to be. You're supposed to be here healing people and helping people and guiding people. Slap.
But that's not cool, right?
You know, it's not 80s, is it? It's not Cobra Kai. It's not the tough guy. Jesus Christ. Well, look, there's an example you wouldn't want to follow. God love him. But, you know, yeah, so that's good. So we're looking for the inner works. We're looking for people, young lads, maybe even girls as well. Let's not pigeonhole, that are like thinking, yeah, I'm in that boat right now. Or it's just begun. I'm aware that I can bury myself away in lockdown in my room and just smoke myself stupid, knowing that there's moments of clarity where I feel there should be more to the world. But really, if you can't go out and explore the world for whatever governmental blah, 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 then why not go inward? Why not go inward?
Maximize this opportunity.
Yeah. Absolutely, right? This is the biggest forced world meditation.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dalai Lama used to say the only way we're getting off this planet is when every single soul living here is resonating at the same vibration. And then the divinity will go, there's no need for this planet.
Yeah.
Or there's no need for this human experience because they've all reached the same level of consciousness, you know?
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, I didn't really see so much of those 20-year-old. Now I'm seeing it, the 20-odd, 25, 35, you know, or the dad that's at home and struggling because he's minding the kids and the wife's got, you know, disease or is ill. And it's like, what? Now they're being forced. They're coming to me not because of a skin disease or a back pain. There is something else underlying because it's being cracked open by this external force, you know, this perceived external intention.
I see it like popcorn. Like this time in history, it's like popcorn. Like the seeds are just popping everywhere, and it looks messy. The lid's blowing off, but it's like the catalysts are all over the place. Some of them are graphic, some of them are really hard to deal with. Sometimes there's a loss in the family, but the catalysts, the pivots are happening. Everything, this is really anchored for me. Everything is exactly as it's supposed to be. Everything, I'll die when I'm supposed to. Everyone else will die when they're supposed to. Like, I really believe that. So there are no mistakes. So from that perspective, I love the space holding aspect for that man, right, or whatever, just to let him feel normal for a second. Just to let him feel heard, just to actually allow him to tap in for a single second to pop something that wasn't able to be seen before. Because if I look at that swallow, that cry, that one, all those cries that I didn't let out, I'm kinking my hose left and right and center to the point that I can't feel. I'm numb. All my energetic hoses. You just picture it, it's going to look pretty, but all those hoses of the nervous system or whatever, all these little compartments are kinked. So one feeling at a time, you're unkinking those hoses, which are allowing more life force to just flood in. You're allowing more energy to flood into the body.
I'd love to do a human design chart for you at some point between now and the next. I'll do that for you. We'll talk offline about that, and then I'll do it up, and you can have a look and see. I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, someone did one for me, and they said, you know, oh, you've got this specific design, you know.
What are you?
A manifesting generator. So
nice. I'm projecting. What?
Yeah, and you're a projector. Great. Well, that makes sense to me, because it's like, you have a buddy. I have a really good buddy. I love him, Egwin Ertel. He's a movement dude, and you know, he's sitting locked down out in Bali, you know, doing the yoga and doing his online, and like, you know, and he's realized, you know, this guy, he did every martial art conceivable. He trained all the way up to paramedic. He's done so many different sciences. I mean, the guy's probably what we call in the old world, like a prodigy, right? And he realized none of that's relevant. He's just a projector. He's just here to guide people how to move their body. And once he got that, then he started making money, and then he could have a living, and then he could go to Bali and hang out for 2 years. And that's where he belongs. He's an alien. You know, you projectors, you're like the aliens.
That's a big one for you. And I want to just premise, anyone listening to this, you can go to, I think it's jovianarchive.com, but just punch in humandesign.com. And that's a big one for me, because as a projector, I'm supposed to wait for the invitation.
Right? Yeah.
So I've been doing it wrong. Because
I said,
years.
Let's do the podcast. And you went, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
And
I'm
that
getting better at that, because it takes, it's like, so you have a self and a not self. You know, and that resonates with me so much, because we just said, like, awakening is awakening back to who you truly are. And then the layers of the onion is everything that's been pulled on top of you that you're not. But we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to work smart, not hard. You're absorbing all the information. You're bringing it into your body.
4 hours almost a day, storing. Max.
There you go. And then, like a lighthouse, boom. And it's like, here's the information. It's there for you to use. It's not really your concern whether they do it or not. That's not really what you're here to do. It's a bit like we talk about angels that, you know, I say to people, have you really ever, I talk to the angels, or I call in my angel guides, and I was like, well, have you ever really seen an angel? You know, my spiritual teacher used to say to me, you know, angels have never been human. They've never known what it's like to be human. They're here to guide. They're here to give general directions, right? They don't know what it's, they've never physically incarnated. I mean, we could say maybe there are angels within human form. Maybe there is, I don't know. But, you know, it's that idea, like for me as a manifesting generator, it's like I'm a hybrid. So I have that ability to work, like I can work really hard. Like I can go, and I've done it. I mean, that's why I'm great, right? I've worked really hard. But then I can rest, get up and do it again. My problem is frustration and anger. Because when things don't move fast enough, I'm like, we'll get this done. And I've learned now, I have to literally, if I was like this house I'm in now, I've been waiting 10 years for this house. And I've had to sit and bloody be patient. You know, I'm patient. And I was lying in my bed last year in the other house, sick as a dog. I've had some kind of weird food poisoning bug. And I could hear my wife in the other room and on a call with her work. And she came in and she prodded me on the leg. And she said, you know, that house we saw a few months back. Yeah, we got it. And I was like, yay, wiggling my toe with joy. But it was like, you know, 5 years of really strong manifesting and visiting places and driving up and down the country like lunatics, thinking we could buy every single property we saw, right? None of it felt right. And then out of the blue, when we let go, it manifested, boom, and it moved so fast. We put the offer in, 2 weeks later accepted, month later sold, month later moved in. And it's boom, 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 boom. Like a whirlwind.
Yes.
So understanding how you operate serves you. It's not, you know, it serves you. And I think, you know, mental, I mean, that was a big cause of mental things weren't happening fast enough for me. I'm not famous enough. I've done enough podcasting. Oh, my coaching business, we should be on 100 grand a year now, coaching. You know, oh no, I need to have 5 clinics now, not 2. You know, it's all, I need this, I need that. But none of it was really manifesting. It was just pushing. And that causes mental health. Yeah, I mean, my wife will see that. You know, it was a couple of times I went a little bit south. But that's where the growth, that's in a way where the growth happens, in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, what was your biggest moment that you could say you definitely went, right, I'm waking up, or this is a massive spiritual moment for me? Can you think of anything?
I don't have the spiritual awakening moment. I have the moment I found it was going to be a dad. That was a massive light switch that went on for me. Like, it's not just about me anymore. You know, that happy-go-lucky, you know, get myself into whatever sort of situation and warm my way out of it was starting to kind of go, oh, that was a big one for me, December 2012. And then it was, at the time, I didn't really realize, but I was getting so fascinated with personal development. I think a lot of my friends thought I had just, you know, a cult had got me. So between network marketing and practicing gratitude and just, I always had so much enthusiasm to share this.
But
that's where I kept running into some more problems in a way, because I hadn't got that energy, was not sustainable for me when I'm not getting received. When I'm being received, I could go all day and all night because it energizes me and it keeps coming. And I love the intricacies and the complexities of the inner works and the levels of consciousness and how it all plays out, because it's really then, I keep that broader view and I enjoy that. But when it's not being received and I'm in a lunchroom on a construction site and I'm talking about, do you realize when the bank, when you give 10 grand to the bank, they lend out 100 grand and all, and they're just getting all these truths and finding out all this information. I'm like, I fucking knew there was always something up that never made sense. School was always a joke, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then, because I remember watching The Matrix as a teenager and I was like, knock that shit off, fucking Skyfall, I'm not into that. But then when I watched it as a, you know, in my 20s, I'm like, whoa, this makes so much sense.
Same for me.
I mean, what about you? Take me in. I mean, you can answer me that, and then I'd love to dive into your journey as well, because with the medicine, how it all came about.
I'm only now realizing I'm 48, and I realize now 44 years ago was my spiritual awakening. And I can remember, but like, I've only realized it now. It's kind of weird. It's like I've had to, back to the future, I keep rewinding back and going back and revisiting in my mind, like, and I thought maybe it was 25. I thought, yeah, that's probably the right age. Or maybe it was 23 when I injured myself. But really it was 4. And I remember the moment I was playing with Tonka toys. Do you remember Tonka? Tonka toys, they were like really hard. They're amazing toys. If you can ever get them for your kids, they just never break, right?
Nice.
Really handcrafted, beautiful toy, diggers and, you know, earth movers and bulldozers, you know, real man. I mean, I used to run around with, in an army, you know, Action Man was my toy. That was my thing. I used to throw Action Man out on my balcony in South Africa, and he had a silk parachute and he'd float down. And it was all this kind of, it was okay to run around and shoot, you know, and my wife won't let the kids have guns or any kind of gun in the house. I mean, now she's a bit more lax. They have the Nerf guns and it's all good. But it was just part of that expression. You know, there's military background in my family, so it kind of comes out. But I do remember playing these toys in the woods where nearby in this little sort of clearing. We lived in a gated compound complex, not like they are now, not with massive security. And that was just, it was like, I suppose, living in a posh apartment in Ballsbridge, you know. And we were out in this garden, and then the earth just, and I thought I was dreaming, you know, a daydream, or maybe I'm asleep having the dream, but the earth just kind of collapsed and then folded in over me and started kind of like Cookie Monster. She started talking to me and saying, you know, you better behave yourself, look after the planet and do the right thing, or I'm come and get you, sort of thing. And I'm like, Jesus, the earth talks to you. And the trees were kind of bending over going, and I thought, looking back, did I pick up a mushroom?
I was going to say that, but life was getting more and more psychedelic every day.
I was like, did I just, you know, I was like, pick up a bug and it was full of something, you know, but it definitely was this connection. I remember going into my room and locking myself in the room and as a 4-year-old and going, what? But I remember in my head, I used to speak like an adult. I used to like say swear words in my head, like, and I used to think, why am I speaking like an adult? You know, that doesn't make sense. And then when I saw my granddad, he died in that day or whatever, we were moved to England, and he came into the room and sort of took me in, and I was like, you're supposed to be dead, you know? And he's like, no, I'll just come back to say goodbye. And I was like, what the hell? Wow. So I said it to my mom, and I got this little pat, there, dear. Yeah. But inside me, I was going, fucking adults, the fuck do they know, yeah, you know? So, fuck's sake. So in my own mind, I said, like, you know, got to conform to the adult thing, so I'm going to shut it down, and I shut down everything. And at 15 it happened again. My other granddad passed away, and that's the first time I saw my dad cry. And I mean, he was a sensitive soul, right? He wasn't one of these hard ass dads who doesn't care. He was a sensitive man, tough man, but sensitive. And he gave me a big hug on the driveway, and he said, I'm never going to see him again. And in my head I was like, oh yeah, you are. You have no fucking idea. And then I lay down. I remember at the time I was kind of confused about my music choices. I wasn't sure if it was Guns N' Roses or I should like David Bowie. I wasn't quite sure. I used to have these Walkman, which is like a cassette player, right? 80s thing again, right? Put these in, lay down on the couch and, like, you know, just listening to whatever it was. And then in walks the grandfather, puts the fire on, starts warming his hands. And I'm like this with my eyes going, he's not there, he's not there. Oh, he's there. No, he's not. No, he's not. Oh, God, he's shit. He's still there. And I just watched him. And then he just was doing what he'd normally do. And then I kind of was like, oh, I'm dreaming. I've woken up. I'm in that in-between alpha state. I'm kind of overanalyzing everything. And I said it to my grandmother the next day. So, you know, granddad came in and put the fire on. Like, oh, yeah, he'd always do that. That's what he did. I mean, he was in the war, don't you know? He liberated Dachau, you know, and it was minus 15 in Dachau. And looking at all those bodies, you know, it really affected him. And he always liked to be warm. He had terrible angina. And I was thinking, right, he's just, you know, he didn't know he was dead. He was coming back trying to just hang on in there and get. And then it was a few years later, I realized, actually, we don't die. We just go to another vibrational pattern. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes that veil, like there's people that are dead still living on the earth. You just can't see them because they're living in another version of the Matrix. Mm-hmm. It's the Apple Mac version, and we're in the PC Windows, and there's another version, mm-hmm, and the Linux, and they all vibrate. And, you know, just, it's not real. It's all just a collection of matter, organized information in waveform. And that then made me realize I'm okay with being spiritual now because I can put a science on it. So yeah, that's all good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was 25, another event, at a wedding anniversary of my parents. And my auntie was called the White Witch of the North, right? She was this psychic medium. She'd get up on the rostrum and go, is there anybody here who's missing a Stanley, passed over only a few years ago? And there'd be people going, yeah, me, at the back, like, you know. I used to go, this is the charlatans, you know, these people. Charlatans. Never into it. So I avoided it, right? So she grabbed me by the hand and she recited word for word a conversation I'd had with a girl 5 years earlier where I was trying to jump into her bedroom and get off with her, right? And I really fancied this girl. She had beautiful long red dreadlocks and I was totally enamored with this look. And I was coming up with all my best chat up lines and kind of just cheesy, cheesy crap. And she recited word for word what I'd said. And I went as white as that wall behind me. I went, holy, how did you know that? And she said, because you felt weird when you're in that building, didn't you? And I was like, yeah, I was creeped out. And she said, you know, when you went downstairs for a pee in the basement? I said, how did you know that? You were being watched. I was like, what was in the building? She said, that used to be an old person's retirement home and hospital. And there was a dirty old man sat at the end of the bed listening into your conversation. And that was his room. And I was like, then I just had total certainty that we don't, we physically die, but we don't at a vibrational level die. And we can be, go and see and be anywhere. And that was, that. There's no possible way. There was no mobile phones. There was no CCTV. She never met the girl. She never was. How could she know? But it was the word. It was word for word. It's the fact that she knew my actions, where I went, where I'd walked to, how I'd gone through the building, what route I'd taken. It was like CIA stuff, right? How the hell? So that forced me into this. And then I would
say, trusting the invisible, right? Trusting what you can't see. And exactly. There's probably not, and what you probably don't have an explanation for. I think that's a big piece on the journey. Couple of experiences, one that then just locks it in. Okay, well, I don't care if they think I'm mad anymore. You know, it's bigger than that.
Well, you had that chart that you follow, you know, the one that you use for explanation, that's different colors and vibrational, right? That's the perfect tie-in to this, right? And mental health is vibrating at a certain vibrancy. I think we only see 3%. Now, somebody could correct us on this podcast, but I think we only see 3% of the total color spectrum. What?
Yes, and 1% of the universe's matter.
Of it is, there you go. Have a look at neutrinos, not Tortinos. My little girl keeps singing this song called Tortinos. It's hilarious, but anyway, neutrinos. It's a kind of quantum physics thing. And this idea that, you know, 97% of everything is void, you know? So we are seeing 3% of what is available to us. So that's filtered through this. This is a bio suit. This is a space suit. It's designed for living in this current reality, you know?
And then from like, just to jump in, like, let's say someone was really depressed, come on here. It's hard to see anything past your feelings in that way. Because all the reasoning that you have at that level of consciousness, at that level of depression or stuck in guilt or whatever, that's the lens that everything is perceived through.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's what I'm finding is, and you can explore this with me. There's no rationale when we're in deep states of depression or fear. It's not a case of, like, logic doesn't work, because if logic worked, we'd be in a very different world. Like, the world right now is a key example of, if logic and statistics and truth was able to be written in front of you and supported by X, Y, or Z amount of people, then a lot of this stuff would go away overnight. But logic is not going in. So I think that's layered as well, because there's lots of conditioning and hypnosis nearly happening there. But it's like, what way do you see that?
I have a really mad take on it, right? Because we talk about, you know, how you only use a certain percentage of our brain, right? But really, our brain is just storage. It's just a computer for storage. I think we need to move away from that model. I mean, okay, how do you deal with someone with a definite serotonin, dopamine compromise? Then, yeah, you know, it's a bio computer that helps you filter the information. So therefore, it's faulty. It needs fixing. But there are some people who've been diagnosed with depression, like my wife, you know, like my wife was, where it wasn't really, it was just, it was fitting within a certain thought pattern that was taught to that person. And it was sitting in a series of diagnostic measures that when they all count up to 10, then they can, now we have a diagnosis. It might not, but if you ask me at an esoteric level, I do believe there's a vibration. Or energy on this planet that to some extent is being broken, and it was the old vibrational pattern that's holding us in a limited I don't want to call this like some sort of either outside force, alien technology, nothing like that. It's just like a vibration that's existing on the planet that allows us to only reach a certain potential, and now that's kind of, it seems to be fading. It's like the engine that's driving that vibration.
We also cling to the known, even though it's a state of suffering. Yeah. There's an aspect of like, I'd rather be suffering and know what to expect. People around me know how to respond. I know how to respond to them. They know if I walk out and slam a door, leave me for a couple of days. And and as crazy as that sounds, there's a choice that's actually choosing safety.
Yeah.
In a fucked up way.
And then we see these odd people that appear. I'm sure you've experienced them or met them or studied them, where they can do these incredible human feats, right? Like Chu Song Ting is a guy, I think, this Wing Chun practitioner. He's passed on now. He weighed all of about 7 stone wet, right? And he was well into his 80s. Well, he could hit you and send you 30 feet. And I mean, really hit you so hard. He had no muscle, just bone and skin. And he'd spent all his life trying to get at least one student to the same level that he is. And he couldn't understand why nobody could get to his level. And then we go, oh, he's an exceptional human being. He must be his genetics, or, you know, blah, blah. No, it wasn't. It was his environment, and it was his internal environment. And he wasn't conforming to what he'd been taught, or he was breaking that pattern. And exceptional human feats should be normal. We should be like Marvel superheroes. If we want to walk through a wall, we should be able to walk through a wall. You know, what's stopping that from occurring? Is it evolutionary? Are we in a prison
belief
of our body life?
Yeah.
Is it the powers that be know the real truth about potential, but they want to keep it from us because it keeps them in an exalted position? We could go down that sort of conspiratorial route if we wanted. But I do think that there's various vibrations that occur on the planet. And I do believe that there were races and civilizations that lived here a lot longer that's been recorded, and that they worked in harmony with the planet. They used building materials from the planet. They didn't artificially create things like plastics. They just worked with the materials in harmony, and maybe not necessarily any nicer or any more pleasant or any more spiritually enlightened, just a different kind of spiritual or energetic awareness, not necessarily any better. I mean, Christ, we can fly through the sky at Mach 3, 86,000 feet up and spy on the Russians, you know? So it's not like we can't do incredible things. It's just we've learned to do it outside of our body, right? Yeah. So the internet is an external manifestation of a skill we already have. Mobile phones is an external tool of something I believe we could already do. Now what's happening is the technology that we have created is now evolving and reaching out to us to fuse back with us. And yeah. I think that's quite frightening for some people to think that, you know, maybe not in our child's lifetime, but in their grandchildren's lifetime, there may be AI humans. There may be humans that are synthetically blended, not necessarily with a computer, but with some other biotech. And we're like, oh my God, no, this is like Skynet, Terminator, it's all going to go wrong. But I think if we maintain enlightenment and we maintain a spiritual ideas, and we realize perhaps we're just learning to upgrade, and we still can maintain our humanity. What annoys me is when we're being forced to switch off our humanity. Like, why is that? Why is that? Why are we doing that? Why are we now following this rhetoric of, you know, we can't hug, you know, we're not allowed to stand more than 6 feet. You know, I mean, one of my clients laughed at me and said, "What, you do acupuncture, Anthony? Yeah. Do you have a 6 foot needle? Do you have a 6 foot acupuncture needle now?"
It's messed up.
I was like, well, yes, I do. It's called a javelin.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, come on.
It's messed up. And I think that sums up everything that we're saying there. Because if we are in the moment, if we are in our own humanity, if we are getting in touch with our true essence, then we naturally have the confidence to pursue our idea. Because it's just our idea. We don't need validation from other people. Yes, we can talk about it, but there's too many opinions out there from too many small minds, too many mediocre minds. And it's no judgment. It's just we've all been led down the garden path of limitation. It's the way it is. Our brain is honed in. Even with COVID deaths, is a great example. From memory, I think I Googled at the start of this how many people died in Ireland, and I got 2017 statistics was 600 people a day. Nobody ever honed in and focused on that and made it this big thing. right? And it's proven now that the heart rate, the deaths for the last 3 years have been exactly the same statistically, but the COVID has went up in the exact proportion that heart rate and everything else has went down. So it's actually, there's actually not a pandemic. Like, the numbers are there, but because we have been led down that garden path, and because we can focus in on something and make it this big thing, and fear of death, born death, it's a natural evolution of life.
Yeah,
it's a kind of the same thing.
So we've what been if led this down virus was upgrading us? What if it wasn't here to kill us? Oh, what if it was designed to upgrade us? Right.
If it, like, I don't even, if there's a virus, that's a whole other conversation, right? But sticking to summing that all back up, like, and the limitation was what it was, and that's why we haven't really got the confidence to pursue our own uniqueness, to embody our own unique blueprint, so that we're not trusting ourselves to actually, or we're not being nurtured to actually be our full authentic self. 30 children are going into a classroom and expected to grow with the same IQ year after year after year, and the guy who's good at art or a pianist or soccer or whatever is being classed as dumb because it's so beyond belief that we've got to that point, but it is what it is. And that, I think, is a lot to do with why we suffer, because we're disconnected. We're not in tune with what we came here to do. And man needs purpose. Man needs to have a reason for being. He needs to be in tune, in my opinion, with what he's
here to do. You live longer. You live longer if you
have and happier purpose. And more aligned and more fulfilled. And you can put it up the laundry. And I don't think, yet there's so many different aspects to that, but I mean, the mental health, I think, would be solved if we actually were able to be honest. And there's a few things to that, but be honest with exactly what we're here to do, even if that seems outlandish to our immediate environment.
What if you had agreed? What if you had agreed contractually in another lifetime that when you come here to live in this existence, you'd agreed to be the vibration of Jonathan Fitzsimons, projector, inner work, school,
born into mentor. This man, this, and you were like, this area.
You're like, yeah, you, I really want to do I'll that. I'll push that on the touch screen. I'll take that one. And then the guy pulls, the salesman pulls you to one side and goes, now you're going to have to do a lot of weed. You're probably going to have to get pissed up. You most weekends everything. In Australia. You might even fall out with your missus and the kids, you know, it's going to be a bit of a rough ride in the kids. And, yeah, you're going to find it a real struggle to get online and get any followers, but it'll all work out. And yeah.
Sign me up.
And you're like, that's all good with me as long as the prostate keeps working.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, I lost my dad. What are we now? Yeah, it's going to be 8 years. And I loved him. I just absolutely fucking loved the guy. He's a mentor. He was a mentor. And I did a lot of work over his death. I did a lot of, you know, journeying and going to get help and dealing with the grief and the loss and all that. And then a buddy of mine from a few years ago, you know, he said, I'll do a healing on you, distal healing. And then he tuned in and your dad come through and he just, the message was so clear and it sounded so like my dad. It was so authentic. And it's just confirmation again. Never mind Zoom and school. This is the classroom.
Yeah.
You ain't gonna. That's why so many souls are sitting up there waiting to get down here, and they want to experience. They want to be born into this planet, because this is where the real growth. This is attractive. You know, we've gone from 2 billion people now to nearly 8 billion people in the space of what, I don't know, 50 years, 60 years. It's exponential growth, right?
It has consequences.
Huh?
It's exhilarating.
It's exhilarating.
From that perspective.
Yeah. I mean, we could be 20 billion by the time we die, right? By the time we leave this mortal earth. We don't know. Yes, of course, I fear for my kids and I worry about their safety, and that's just normal parental concerns. But you're right. They're well-equipped, you know. Like my son said to me the other day, No, it was in the first lockdown, he said, I said, how do you feel, Scott, about the whole thing? He said, I feel terrible. I said, why? He said, because they're all blaming the children. And I was like, what do you mean they're all blaming you? Yeah, well, because like we're not allowed to go to school because we might carry the virus to all the elderly people and kill them. And I was like, they don't actually know that. They don't actually know that for real. You're just listening to that on the radio. And I said, so what would your solution be, Scott? So I didn't want to go down the, trying to reassure him. I was trying to get him to be self-empowered. And he's like, well, actually, I'd set up a separate city just for the children, and they could go there and just be together. And then I was like, whoa. And then we literally got about 20 seconds down the street and he went, actually, that's a terrible idea. I read the book, Lord of the Flies. We'd all end up killing each other for ice cream, you know. So he's well aware of how important it is to have the adults. You have to have them for safe. We're here for to make them feel safe, make them feel secure. They're here to guide us.
Show us what we can see, all the little aspects that we can't see. Yeah,
they're gonna express all those things that you repress in yourself. If you're not patient, they'll teach you patience.
Yeah,
you know. If you're an angry person, they'll teach you how to be calm. If you're too calm, they'll teach you how to lose your temper.
Yeah.
That's what they're here to do. It's a balancing act. And what do we do? We treat them as a commodity. Well, we don't, but certain echelons.
Yeah.
They sit them down. They're at a table. These are the rules. This is what you do. Yes and no. You do this and then you do that. And kids do like structure. Don't get me wrong. They love structure. They love it. But within all that, they have chaos as well, you know.
It comes back to that unworthiness, right? It comes in the adult of the parent. It comes back to like, none of us are perfect, but it's just pointers. It's actually the unworthiness that has the you don't want the child jumping up the back of the chair. Like, I've experienced all this stuff to where I'm just like, I've got to let go. I feel the stuff that comes up in that moment. I'm not going to try and water them down and tame them in too much or even at all if I can.
Well, I tell you what, you were way wilder as a kid than your own kids were. I guarantee you.
I had so many fields to explore. Like, I was out, gallivanting. I think I had a cigarette when I was seven. We're still on seven now.
It's like that joke. It's a bit of an English joke. I don't know if it translates to the Irish audience, but it probably does. There's two cops, two English bobbies, knock on the door of these flats. There's a bit of a row, a bit of a noise. Knock on the door. Door opens, and there's this little kid, you know, he's about seven. He's wearing a smoking jacket. He's got a cognac, quaffing the cognac, and a big cigar in the corner of his mouth. And in the back, just in the background, you can see a couple of hookers, like, running around half naked. And the two cops are, like, looking at the kid and go, "Is your mum and dad at home?" And the kid goes, "What the fuck do you think?"
awesome.
It's like, you know, and so, yeah, mental health, it could actually start at that age, couldn't it? It could start at this now. It could start with these kids right now. But I would say, to end, if we're going to come to some conclusion on this, is, and I'm going to say to the people that know me, is to reach out to Jonathan if you're feeling any of his words or his ideas. How does it work, Jonathan? Do they reach out to you personally, or do you draw them into sort of a private Zoom group, or how are you actually working now? How is this going to function going forward?
One-to-one. I'm going to do a couple of more group programs, but mainly one-to-one for now.
Okay. All right. That's good.
And packages. I was doing one-to-one early sessions, but it's more 4 months now, 3-4 months, 6 months. It's better.
Yeah,
it's longer term because it's
commitment.
Like, once we open Pandora's box, it's like you just said, it could start at that age. And it's like, yes, because we don't make conscious meaning of all these things. So we're at that young age with the brains making all these meanings, and it's powerful stuff. And then you have the I'm sure it's the same in the UK. It's like that banter, or what we call banter, can be extremely fucking harsh. Like the size of your head, the width of your crust, look at the nose on this fella, it's like a Concorde. And it's just it's funny in one sense, once you can take it, you know, but it has to be going in and creating some sense of insecurity, or building on insecurity that's already in there.
I have to say it's
so messed up.
I agree. And I'm going to say this to you now, having lived here 24 years, Irish people are the best at slagging. Like,
Conor McGregor's getting paid $100 million for fucking standing there walking around slagging Mayweather, right?
Look, I got my baptism in Limerick. I moved to Limerick in 97. I got 2 years of constant slagging for my accent, you know. So you do get a bit hardened, you know, but you realize it's a national sport and you can't be offended. It's, you know.
Yeah, but I laugh, but not everybody is equipped to respond, and you don't know how that's affected. It's really, I know I'm laughing at it, but when I think about the shadow aspect of it, it's like it's deep.
Yeah, yeah, it is, but you don't realize. I mean, you know, if you take a glass and you put a plant in it and then you shout at the plant, like, I hate you, plant, you know, you're evil, you're a piece of shit. The plant's going to eventually feel that, right? It's a creature. It's probably more noble, more wisdom than most of our politicians. But it's, it's that, you know, it's words are real. I mean, there's times I'm sure you can think back where you think, oh, Jesus Christ, what did I say to, why did I say that to my son? Oh, why did I say that to my daughter now? And just, and you're kind of now feeling guilty because you don't know what the ripple effect is down the line. You just don't know. How do you know? Parents aren't equipped. We aren't equipped. There's no manual. Kids don't come with a manual, you know? Mm. So that's why you got to let them teach you and guide you, like, you know, without obviously them walking all over you. And divide and conquer is quite a common theme with some children. And then we have these diagnoses of ADHD. My son got diagnosed with SPD, sensory processing disorder. And you know what? He's got his own coping mechanisms. He's got his own ways of dealing with it. He's very different. He's actually, he's a pure manifester, which is, they say in human design, probably the toughest design to be. It's a tough gig. But he copes with it admirably. Like, he's just a legend. The daughter's like me. She's very like me. And, you know, I have my qualities and my traits, and I can be a lazy ass as well, you know, and this today I had a nice lie-in. And now I've got to go back to painting the house. So nice. At the end of this podcast,
before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, isn't it? After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water.
Oh my God. I tell you what, I'm regretting watching reruns of Cobra Kai now. Cause I'm painting, you know, painting the fence, you know, show me paint the fence. But anyway, it's all good. I've got to move the body. And I would say to people from my perspective is get back into your body. And I don't mean you necessarily have to do crazy CrossFit stuff, but you do have to get back into, when you feel yourself drawn into the drama, when you see yourself being pulled mentally. I mean, one of my good buddies who will be watching this, I'll forward it on to him because he's a definite advocate. He would be a good chap to align with, as Virg Mannion. And Virg has an incredible story where he's literally in his doctor's waiting room and 5 minutes later he's in the back of a hospital being wheeled off because he's admitted he's going about to commit suicide. And he's cured his depression through diet. He chose vegan. It worked for him. He's built like a beast. He's got 4 arms bigger than my thighs. He drums and he can bust out 500 push-ups a day. You know, so he's upgraded his physical design, and through doing the physical design, he's mentally more aligned. I mean, he still feels it. You know, he still gets those speed wobbles, but those are the kind of people that are inspiring to me, is real life people, not necessarily the famous people, but real life Joe Soaps, engineers, builders, painters and decorators who've managed to, who can genuinely come from a place of, I've been there. And I think that's what I want to impart to people listening to me and you, is you've been there from very much from finding it the way yourself, finding the way yourself. I'm sure you've had mentors. I've been lucky. I've had lots of really good mentors, but I'm now in a position where I can't find a mentor. So it's like a friend of mine said, well, maybe you are the mentor. And so you need to stop looking and just work with what comes to you, what you channel, what comes into your heart, what comes in through the breath, and just see what you are manifest. What can you manifest? What can you generate? What can you put into the world? And I would say a lot of people that suffer with mental health are really very creative people. They're just not channeling their energy properly. And that they, right need, brain, they need the skills.
Yeah, the right brain. The left memory is so, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. And we're just remembering for the tests. And then the right brain, we lose touch with it. That's where the likes of the weed plant I don't really like calling it weed. It doesn't really resonate that much. But the marijuana plant, it connects you to that creativity.
Yeah, you
and
know,
it's insane. It's because you're saying Wi-Fi, and to me, the right brain, I just associate the right brain being with Wi-Fi. And when you're saying like I think we used to have phones. That was it for me. Then that's the connectedness. It's the right brain. It's the connection to whatever it is that we're connecting to.
I think marijuana was called the god herb in India.
Green goddess.
Okay.
Probably. And then, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. But actually, green goddess in my time was this really strange aerobics fitness lady who was on morning TV. Anyway, that's another story. Probably my first crush. But the green, yeah, the god plants. And it's interesting, it's one of the only plants in the world that has the exact chemical design that fits directly into our endocannabinoid system. No other plant can do that. So, you know, and it's interesting that there are, I think, cows and oxen in India that eat it, but other creatures don't. So, you know,
it's very interesting. We might have to do our own too, because I feel like we could riff, because On the plant, I done plant medicines last week or last year, a little bit heavier ones, and I had this vision when I seen them, and it's an interesting one. I'll just finish it. I'll share that with you.
Mm.
I seen a big, huge tree, like an absolutely humongous tree, and then a full, as far as the eye could see, of those trees, and then I seen a little human beside it in the vision. I'm like, you know, because before I was saying, how does this tree, or how does this bark, or how does this cactus have knowledge, or how does it have wisdom? Well, just when I seen that image, it kind of all just made sense. Well, that's here, because that intelligence of the tree or that plant has been around a lot longer than we've been.
Well, I'll leave you with this. Go and do some research on the giant trees of Earth.
Okay.
There is a belief system. I don't know if they're crazy or flat earthers or whatever, but there is this belief system that, you know, like places like Table Mountain, right, in Cape Town, this flat, that on top of that, it was a platform for these huge trees that could reach, you know, these things were so tall, you know, you're talking, you know, like half
feels like there's something in that for me.
There is something in that. And, you know, we could say, was that part of that wisdom, the wisdom tree? You know, we see it everywhere now, don't we, on these jewelry and this idea of like the Kabbalah, the tree of wisdom, you know, maybe that was the tree in Eden, you know, and that the apple was the knowledge, not a fruit, you know. So, but definitely look at that, the giant trees of the earth, there is this idea that they were there, that they actually sat on top of these specific mountains, and they're gone. Why are they gone? Where did they go? Were they destroyed?
The mystery is in the history, right? It's very, very intriguing to me. And then you mainstream laughs at tree huggers. I don't hug trees, but there's actually a science to it.
There is.
Mainstream doesn't allow cannabis. It's only becoming mainstream now for like people have to go on and on and on and on about the healing benefits of it, and and drugs with barcodes are just pushed on everybody everywhere. It's like whatever's in mainstream, it's probably not true. It's probably bullshit.
No. I treat a scientist at the moment, and she's one of the only people in Ireland that's investigating low microdose, like proper medically microdosing certain substances. And she said, between me and you, it's coming. It's under the radar. They're keeping it under the radar as much as they can, because Ireland is pharma rich.
Yes.
And I don't mean, and I mean pH.
Yes.
And she said, they're having I think it's more than 45% of the cases, like complete and utter resolution of depression, like complete, not like, yeah, you need to take it every so often. It's like gone.
Rewards the circuitry in it almost.
Well, yeah. Look at the way those species grow. They grow in a mycelium. It's a neural network for plants. The trees use it to communicate. So they hook into a plant-based internet. When a tree's chopped down at the far end of the Amazon, the mycelium communicate on the floor bed to the other side to warn the other trees, danger's coming.
It's fascinating. And there's someone somewhere going, oh, Jesus, no, I someone took them things and jumped off the top floor of a building. It's like there's always a story that just goes. Well,
I have a bit of a people know me know that I slag off vegans a bit, and sorry vegans if you're watching, I don't mean it like nastily. It's just a bit of fun for me. But like, there's been a guy who records plants and the vibrations, the sounds they make, sounds, right? And they had this guy pull this carrot out of the ground, and it was screaming like something out of Harry Potter. And then he was cutting it, and it was like, and it's like, yeah. So we don't just murder animals; we murder plants too. But like yeah, it's like, you know, everything is recyclable. We're recycling it. You know, if we just pooped it out properly and put it somewhere safe, you know, it's going to grow new things. And really, that's all our body does, is it absorbs particles into us. So if we're taking these chemicals, I mean, my teacher of acupuncture used to say, you know, why you want to do, so you get sick, why? And then your sickness is like fly in room, fly going around, bothering you with landing on head. Why are you going to do, take out AK-47, blah, 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 blah. That's the medicine that we have, is the AK-47 to kill a fly. And he said, in China, no, we just get chopstick. You know, so it's like, you know, what he's saying is it's overkill. A lot of the medicine we're taking, I mean, it's been proven already, and it's right in front of us. One of the vaccines they're dishing out that they don't want to admit to it, was more effective in half the dose than the full dose. Oh, it was an accident. It was an experimental accident. No, it wasn't. It was divine intervention to tell you, you don't need to take as much of that shit to get the results you want.
It's insane. It's so backwards, and like, sense is not common. Like, we Johnny, as a young 20-year-old teen and a teen, laughed at all of this stuff. Like, he laughed, and he'd call you a hippie, he'd call you a reborn or a Jehovah Witness. Yeah. And there's no judgment anybody. He'd label you, he'd label you, and he'd fob off and shut down everything. But really, then you find out that we're actually not supposed to shit the way we shit on a toilet paper. We're supposed to hunker down, but we laugh at those crazy motherfuckers over that side of the world, right? So I think mental health is down to actually living backwards. And if you spell live backwards, it spells evil, right? And if there is an evil force, it's someone out there who had a fucked up.
Well, it's the devil. Devil, you know, devil is lived backwards. You're living your life ass ways. Literally. That's the real devil.
And it's so easy to fix. And it's just, if I could say anything to anybody, it's just be honest. Be honest, take responsibility, be mindful of the blame, be mindful of judging or complaining or blaming anybody or anything, because you can keep doing that, but it's like a dog chasing its tail. It all comes back to the here and now. It comes back to the free things like breath. It comes forgiveness, acceptance. Like, imagine not accepting what happened. Like, yeah. That's the human condition. Imagine not accepting something that has actually happened. And we all do it.
Yeah.
But imagine not acceptance. It's so fucking crazy at its essence that we've just got a little bit removed from reality, and it's been orchestrated.
Look at the Dharma Brothers. Have you seen that film, The Dharma Brothers?
No.
See if you can find it on YouTube. It's an amazing experiment done in a prison in America. And they created replicated a type of silent retreat that's done in Indian Ayurvedic sort of circles. And they did it with a group of hardened criminals, lifers, basically, you know, they have ridiculous sentences in the States, like 100 years in jail. Oh yeah, I'm 67. How's that going to work? But they got them doing this, meditation, and it completely transformed them, the energy, the violence in the prison went down. And then, you know, it was in the deep South, you know, and it was just going amazing. And there was guys there that were like, had raped and killed and destroyed, and they had to go really journey really inside and really go deep. And even though they faced these like 200-year sentences, they actually said, I've come to peace with it, because every day I can go inside and go into the infinite within. So I'm never alone. And I can deal and accept things that I've done and the reasons why I did it. And all this kind of zero, you know, going to the zero state, a state of ultimate potential with no movement. And then a new governor came in and went, yo, we ain't going to do that. Send them straight back into the locker house. And that was it. And it all went tits up. But for that brief moment, we as a race realized, you know, 90% of the people in prison in the States are of colored origin and locked up for, you know, multiple. Why? Like, you know, but then they get them into this meditative state and just things would just magic would unfold. And they found it really tough. They were breaking down mentally, emotionally, spiritually, because they had to listen to the bell, ding, get up, meditate, ding, go get your breakfast in silence, ding, go back and rest, ding, come back and meditate. And so it was ultimate discipline without distraction.
And make a friend with yourself.
Yeah. And the mind was, the demons, the devil backwards, you know, was like constantly tearing up, trying to pull them out of the meditation, trying to bring them back to their old self, to their conditioning, to their upbringing, to the wrongs that have been done against them, to the environment in which they were brought in, to the government messages telling them that they're no good and that they live in a criminal neighborhood. All that went. And they became more monk-like than the monks that were teaching them, you know. But definitely check it out. And that would be an excellent way to say thank you very much for allowing me to come on and be with you. I'd love to do a second round. I really want to explore ayahuasca, maybe some plant psilocybin experiences, and then things like the breath work and naturally stimulating our own healing. And I'm hoping to launch the Cup of Chi podcast soon.
Nice.
In the next couple of weeks, and I'm going to bring you on, and we'll come at it from another angle and see
100%.
See what message resonates to everyone. And I'm going to go and paint now.
And get people off the radio, right? Let's get people off the radio and just into some, you know, decent conscious conversations.
Yeah, for sure.
Bubbles to pop where they may, land where they may.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Epic stuff. Right, I'm going to literally hit that.